everybody. This is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We are back with an getting healthy podcasting
getting
partner
healthier.
Over there. I'm looking at her and she's looking really good. Excited.
Slow. But I am seeing, for everybody tuning in, I had COVID and it's been 3 months and I'm not better. I mean, I am better. I'm not well, but definitely seeing improvements, which is so great. So we were just saying beforehand, we need to celebrate the wins, and the wins are tiny and exciting.
And Nuno and I are trying to get her to not overexert and
right
and kick it back. Boy, it's really easy to do that. So I'm so glad you're feeling better, honey. Can podcast. So let's go podcast. Let's talk about how to be better investors. And today, what are we discussing in terms of that very theme of Warren Buffett style investing? What are we doing?
Well, we had talked last time about going over the 13F filings of our favorite, what do you call them? Super investors? Guru investors. Our favorite investors. So actually what I'd love to do before we talk particularly about companies that they're buying and selling. Well, first, do you want to say what 13Fs are really, really quickly for everybody who didn't listen the last time?
Well, first, you can tell them that. But first, I want to tell everybody why this is part of our investing strategy. In fact, this is a really major part.
So many preludes. Let's go through them.
Oh, the big thing is that that we like to clone. We like to take advantage of the fact that you can clone a really good investor. That is, you find somebody who really knows their stuff, who invests properly, and then watch what they do. And there's a way to do that. But even prior to the SEC making it more available for the little guy to look at what, you know, really successful, really big investors are doing, this idea of cloning goes all the way back to when Warren Buffett first started with Ben Graham and began cloning Ben Graham's investing. And then we've heard from Manish Pabrai, who is very public with the idea that he's an inveterate cloner. We've got just so many
Lee
examples.
Lee Lu has talked about it a bunch.
Yeah. And then there are so many just people in the news. I mean, I remember this lady named Gladys Holmes, who was a secretary in Chicago. And when she was 80 years old, she hired the Northwestern University Marching Band to come through the streets of Chicago so she could ride in a convertible. And they played Happy Birthday to her and had a parade for her because she donated $18 million to the children's hospital. She was a secretary. She never made more than $18,000 a year. And she was a secretary. And she just cloned her boss. Her boss was a really good investor, and she cloned him. And by the way, if you remember the movie, I want to say Bewitched, but that isn't it. It was this girl whose dad's a chauffeur and she grows up above the garage.
Oh, Sabrina.
Sabrina. And her father became wealthy cloning the guy he was driving. You remember that?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a deep well of cloning that's gone on out there. And I have to say, it's one of the greatest advantages of a small investor. And the vast majority of investors first don't even know you can do it. And second, even if they know, they don't do it.
I agree. I think those two components are key because obviously if you have access to somebody who's a great investor and all you have to do is listen to what they're buying and selling and copy them, then that is a easy as pie way to go unless they're wrong, which is a whole separate thing.
You don't have the benefit of hindsight, right?
Right.
But UNLV did have the benefit of hindsight, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And they decided in 2007 to do a study on cloning Warren Buffett, assuming that you would only buy stocks when it was public information that Buffett bought the stock and sell it only when it was public information that Buffett sold it. Mm-hmm. And you would have to do it on the last day of the month that it became public, and you would do it at the worst price. So they did this study.
The worst price on that day or the worst price of the whole month?
On that day.
Okay.
Worst price on that day. And so they took a lot of the sort of, you know, the luck factor out of it, I guess. And they did it from 1976 data all the way through 2006 data. And do you remember the compounded return? It was something around 20%.
Ballpark. Yeah, I think it was a little more than 20%.
Might have been a bit more.
I feel like I have it saved on my computer.
I did the math
somewhere
on this, and if you had invested following this exact strategy, $5,000 a year in your Roth IRA, you would have come out at the end of 30 years with something like, I don't know, $14 million or 15. You would have been multi-millionaire mm-hmm. on $5,000 a year. So $150,000 invested over 30 years, you end up with like $15 million. So it's any case, now we can all do it.
And the interesting part is that the second thing that you said was, what was the first? Okay, guys, my brain is not back to normal. Let me just be very clear about that. So the first part was you have to know the information, right?
You have to know you can do it.
Oh, you have to know you can do it. True.
And then you've got to use
the second part is you have to actually do it. And I think what a lot of us struggle with is the actually doing it part because of what I just said, which is you don't know if they're right or not. So without the knowledge that you can go and check it out and do an overview of a company and try to see if it's something you actually agree with, I think it is, like, frankly, way terrifying to just follow somebody else into it. But that's right. What I think is so cool about combining knowledge with copying somebody or taking ideas from them. Like, it's the perfect match, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what you're saying is so true. The guy that was in The Big Short, Michael Burry, he was this amazing guy who had hedge fund money, and he found a way to short the mortgage bonds. And he had investors in the movie were screaming at him. They wanted their money back, and he made them several billion dollars. And so we like to follow Burry. He's very much a Rule One type investor. Very small number of companies that he buys. And we track him. And we look at his investment, and it's like, okay, he's buying this company. And then we look at this company, and it's this train wreck of a company. It's got massive debt. It's like this company we would never get near, right? It just violates everything.
Yeah.
And so we can't buy those. I, as much as I'm thinking, this guy's a genius, and here it is right in front of me, like this genius effectively has called me up on the phone and said, hey, Phil, I'm buying this company, right? Once every quarter, I get that information from him. And I still can't bring myself to buy it because I don't understand the company. I don't get it. Why in the world is he doing this one? And it turns out, as we were looking at some of the things he was doing recently, he wasn't buying these as long-term investments at all. He was buying these as kind of speculative. Hmm. I'm pretty sure they're going to go up. I could be wrong. He did four of those like that. We couldn't understand a single one of them. And he got three right. One, totally wrong.
What makes you take that interpretation? Is it that he sold them the next quarter?
Yeah, okay. Gone. Yeah, they popped and he took the money and ran. Mm-hmm. So this is not, so you got to know that. You got to know that this guy who is one of the best investors in the world and loves to buy things and hold them forever and kind of stuff. Yeah, except when he doesn't.
And then I got to say, that's your interpretation. Maybe something changed in his analysis. Maybe he didn't intend to hold it. Maybe he did intend to hold it for a really long time and then changed his mind. You know, you don't know.
Sure.
But the point is you looked at this, you thought it was crap, and he sold it the next quarter.
Right. And he made a ton of money. And it's like, okay, but I don't know how to do that. So I can't use that as a viable investing strategy. For me, that would just be praying that he knew what he was doing. And I'm not going to do that.
Which is where it's so important to know thyself. I was going to say thine self, but I knew that wasn't right. To thine own self be true, know thyself. Yep. Because you know that doesn't work for you, but it might work really well for him. And, and being self-aware about that is everything. I was just talking to a friend who's buying a house, and we were talking about the mortgage and which mortgage option she should choose. And my advice was just do what makes you feel really comfortable and safe with this mortgage. Like if you're someone who was like, should I pick the fixed or should I pick the variable? I'm like, you know, some people love watching interest rates and knowing that they could maybe get a better deal if they do X, Y, and Z, and they watch it all the time and it's just part of their lives and it's fun to them and they would rather take the risk and get a better deal. And other people just want to like buy it and set it and forget it and never think again about the interest rate and know exactly how much money they have to pay. And I said, it's just, I can't give you advice about that. Like that's something you have to decide for yourself. Which style do you want to be? What do you want to be thinking about every month? And I think it's the same with, you know, that's house investing. It's the same with stock investing.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, for me, I have to play the game I can win, right? I mean, if you want to win at tennis, you can really practice and get really, 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 really good. Or you can just play somebody who's a lot worse than you are.
And what? Those two things do not go together. I think what you mean, if you want to feel really good at tennis.
If you want to win. You want to win. So I have to do stuff that's really easy is what I'm saying. I can't do the Michael Burry kinds of stuff. He's got a giant IQ. I mean, this guy was making great investments while in medical school at Stanford. He was spending most of his time investing. And as I'm just not that guy, right? I have to play the game where it's not the higher IQ that wins. It's patience. It's plodding along. It's laziness bordering on sloth and just being willing to be so patient in a way that really fund managers can't be. They're competing to hold on to their capital from these big, huge pension funds, and they have to keep going and be successful against the market this month and next month and the next month. And we don't have to do that. So I need a game that I can win and that's easy to win. So that I have to play the game that way, right? So you got to figure it out for yourself. I have students of ours that are fabulous options traders. Me, I do options to protect myself. I'd use them the way a farmer uses options. Right? I'm not an options trader out there, you know, banging out 50% returns or trying to. And it's, you know, each of these tools needs to be used the way you use it best.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Each of these tools needs to be used the way you use it best. And so, and to find the way that keeps each of us engaged and excited and interested
right on
is really important. That's something I've been working on, not really working because I'm not supposed to work, but thinking a lot about.
Busted.
I've been thinking a lot inside my head about how to make my processes better, because that's what I'm obsessed with in my life.
Inside my head about things I'm thinking about.
About thoughts and how they can be more interesting.
More thinking-like. So 13 Fs to bring us back.
Yeah, yeah.
13 Fs are a form. It's the name of a form for the SEC that the investors who have $100 million or more under management have to complete and file on a quarterly basis. And that makes their, and what that form does is tell you what changes they've made in their portfolio. Number of shares they bought, number of shares they've sold. Now, there's some rules about this. They don't have to tell the SEC anything that they're sold. That they're short on, right?
Correct.
In other words,
yes.
If they don't own the stock and they sell it by borrowing the stock, they don't have to tell the SECs that. So you have to be a little aware that the portfolio may not be quite what it looks like. You're just looking at the long side, so they don't have to tell you options either.
It's also only U.S. securities.
Just U.S. securities, which is another big hole in it. And one of the reasons we're doing this on this podcast is because the Securities Exchange Commission in the United States is considering changing the rules around who has to file a 13F.
And actually, I think that's not going to happen. I think they're not going to change the rules.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear.
This is coming out of like a fever dream from 2 months ago. But I know that somebody sent me an article about, because we had talked about it, and and I was looking into it, and I think somebody sent me an article saying that they've decided not to go ahead with that because the disclosures are more important from a public interest point of view than the regulatory burden put on these firms, which is high. It is high. But I certainly agree with that. I think it's helpful to the little guy.
Yeah.
It's not just about being helpful to the little guy. It's about requiring these funds that are managing. I mean, $100 million is a very large amount of money. It sounds like it's not, because when you have funds that are like $3 billion or whatever, it sounds tiny, but it's a lot of money. And it's important for them to be transparent about what they own and what they're doing.
Yep. Fair guess. I guess you can make the case. Of course, nobody likes it that has to do it, because
everybody hates it.
The problem is that people clone you.
Yeah.
And if you're very large, it makes it more difficult for you to get your full position in. And that means it might take you a year or so to actually get your position large enough where, you know, a really good result isn't just a rounding error.
The other reason everybody hates it is that then they get questions about what they own or what they sold. Mm. And that's annoying. You can refuse to answer them all you want, but you still get the questions.
Right, exactly. But it is a huge, huge help to small investors. So we asked our 180,000 students to please write the SEC.
So it was you then.
And we bombed them. I don't have any idea how many people actually did it, but a lot of us did it. And that's great. I hope they stay away from that. They were going to change it. Their proposal was to change it to those investors that were just large investors, the $3.5 billion or more, which meant actually a pretty decent number of the 46 gurus that we track would have stayed trackable. But we would have lost some really, really good ones toward the lower end of all this. Guys like Manish Pabrai, Guy Spier, they wouldn't have to file. And I really do enjoy looking over their shoulders. I actually totally love it. And I don't know that it really hurts their returns. I don't really think it does.
But I don't think it hurts their returns. I think it's just annoying.
Yeah.
It's expensive. You have to do the filing. You have to handle the compliance. And it takes time. And people know what you own. And it's annoying.
I am generally against regulation, except where it really helps me. Sounds like a standard libertarian, doesn't it?
Sounds like everybody, frankly.
Yeah, right. So 13 Fs. So how do you get them?
Since you mentioned Michael Burry, let's look him up.
Oh, well, how would we do that?
There are a number of methods. So method one, which my dad hates, is you can go straight to the source, to the Edgar SEC website.
I don't know why
it's called Edgar. It's an acronym. I don't know what it's for. Who cares? So go to the SEC company search.
Wait a second. I'm going to sec.gov, right?
I just always put in SEC Edgar and it takes me there.
SEC, just all one word.
No, SEC one word, Edgar word two. And then if you really want to save yourself from searching, then put in company search.
Company search. Okay, I'm writing this in a Google question. SEC Edgar company search. Go. And I have sec.gov/Edgar/search/company search. And I am on the company search page. That was cool, Danielle. Thank you. Now what?
Okay. So how to Google on Invested Podcast. So then what you would need to know is, what is Michael Burry's fund's name? Because it's not going to be under his personal name. It's going to be under his fund.
I'm going to share my screen.
Oh, because we're videotaping this.
You disabled me. Can you enable me?
Oh, golly. Okay.
Okay.
Somehow.
So on the video, we'll show you this thing. It takes a minute here.
Did that let you share?
It did. All right, okay. Perfect.
So what you need to know, as my dad gets his stuff together is the name of Michael Burr. Yes, there it is. And by the way, that's an updated version. It used to be much worse.
It sure did.
So you need to know his fund name. Dad, do you know the name of Michael Burry's fund?
No idea.
Okay, so then what you would do, or what I would do.
Wait, all I know is Michael Burry, so let me put in Burry.
That's not going to get you there.
Yeah, it did. It got Michael J. Burry.
That's going to get his personal buys and sells.
This is what I hate about the government.
It's the government. Come on. They don't file personally, and there are many reasons for that. They file under the fund.
Excuse me, but you can go to Whale Wisdom, Dataroma, the toolbox, and do exactly that, and you would get everything.
You could, but what we're looking up are legal filings.
So the only difference is government. That is
so the only difference is accuracy.
Okay, fine.
So now
what are we putting in here?
What I would do is open up another tab. And write, what is the name of Michael Burry's fund?
All right. Coming up. Here we go. What is the name of Burry's fund?
Scion. Oh, look at that in giant letters.
Should have known that from the movie.
Scion Capital.
Oh, Scion.
Okay. Now here's the fun part, which you're really going to hate. Put in Scion Capital into the Edgar.
Would I have known that? Scion Capital. Yes, I would have known that. Scion Capital. Okay, I got Scion Capital.
And you see there are two options that come up.
There's a capital
group. Now, this is the part that involves, you just have to click on both of them to find out which one.
Involves?
Yep.
Clicking on all of them.
So, I clicked on the first one. Let's see what it says. Oh, look at that. 13F. It was the first one. Scion Capital LLC. Now, because I'm a nerd, I go back and I check the second one to make sure that I didn't get somehow two of them. Nope. That one. Oh, no, wait. This isn't.
I'm going to go to the Scion Capital group now.
Nope. I was wrong. Okay. So this is why you check both of them. Oh, I love this. So the first one was correct, but it was his old fund from before he closed it down after the whole financial crisis meltdown when he decided he didn't want investors anymore. He shut down his fund.
Well, I'm looking over here at the filing dates on Scion Capital Group, LLC, and it looks like they're filed fairly recently. So that's the current one.
Yeah.
That's the current one. So if we go back to the other one,
so I opened them both in two tabs.
Oh, look at that. It's 09, 08, 07. That would be useless to us.
It would.
Unless you like historical stuff. So, okay. Very good.
So I personally think it's quite important to know what the proper name of the fund is that I'm following, because there can be multiple. There was one I looked up. Oh my gosh, who was that? Like Seth Klarman or somebody who has mucho bucks, lots of money, multiple entities. Mm-hmm. And I think there were seven different filings that this guy was involved in various ways. So I just looked at all of them just to make sure. I was pretty sure I knew which one was the fund, but I just wanted to make sure I knew. So I checked out all of them. It takes, you know, an extra 3 or 4 minutes. And that way I know which one is the correct fund to be following.
Okay.
So Scion Capital Group, LLC is our Michael Burry one. Right. Then what you do... Where are you now? Because I'm looking at my screen,
getting over
too.
To Scion Capital Group, LLC.
Yeah.
And then I've got the 13F, the most recent one. Looks like this 2020-11-16. So that would be just filed it, like, last
week. So that's the latest one. So then click on Documents.
Documents.
And then click on, I like to look at the HTML, so click on Primary HTML.
What's an HTML or an XML? What are those?
XML is a different form that I do not understand.
Okay, so HTML. All right, I'm clicking HTML, and it is saying, okay, here's a cut. Now, this is about where I start to get really like, okay, here we go.
Documents, documents, documents.
I got a cover page. Now what?
is it only the cover page? I mean, I haven't looked this up in advance. Yes. I don't know.
I have the cover page.
Oh, yes, you're right. Oh, it's just a notice. So, oh, they checked notice. Okay.
Check here if no holdings reported are in this report or all holdings are reported by other reporting managers.
13F-NT. So, yeah, there's no holdings in there.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Okay. Now I'm getting really curious. If I go over to, let's say, Dataroma.
Yeah, Dataroma shows a filing.
So here we go.
For September.
Dataroma. And I'm now on Dataroma's website, and I'm going to go to Super Investors. And I get an ad. And it lists everybody by their first name. So this is Michael. Michael Burry, Scion Asset Management, which is a different name than the one we had before. This is the third name we now have.
Yeah, that's the thing. Dataroma doesn't use the proper name of the fund. It uses like the name that they use publicly. So I am very curious.
So here we go.
This.
We have a filing as of the 30th of September. That would be the Q3 filing, which would be that November filing. And he definitely reduced GameStop. GameStop was one of the ones I was just talking about. We couldn't figure out GameStop. Looked like they could go bankrupt at one point. He bought more Facebook, which is really interesting because Facebook ain't cheap. And he just added more to it, another 50,000 shares. So 8% of his portfolio is now devoted to Facebook, which is a big chunk. Now, one quick thing here while I'm just blathering on about this is that it shows a portfolio value of $154 million. And it's very, very important to know that all of these ratios are based on that number right there. And that may not be the size of the portfolio. It likely is not the size of the portfolio, in fact. And I think Michael Burry's portfolio is more like about $320 million, which means these are really radically wrong percentages. In other words, he might only have 5% of his portfolio in GameStop, 4% in Facebook, and so on. So while these look quite large, if he's got a lot of money in foreign stocks or a lot of money in cash or a lot of money on short positions, it's not going to be accurate. These are not going to accurately display.
I want to know how you know that he has more funds under management. But wait, before you get to that, I just want to wrap this thing up. Okay, I figured it out. This is what's so amazing about using the SEC Edgar website is you get to really figure out what is happening with this fund and track it from all the different entities they're using or used to use so you can actually understand it instead of being blinded by beautiful data being presented to you. I understand the desire for beautiful data. I also love it. But oh my gosh. Okay. So
this is a victory of higher IQ versus normal people.
I don't think so.
Let me just say what
I did so that then we can move on.
Perfect. How did you find it?
So all I did is I Googled Burry 13F fund, hoping to get the name of the fund, the actual name. So it is indeed Scion Asset Management, which is what Dataroma has as well. Scion Asset Management, LLC. So then I put in Scion Asset Management, LLC into the Edgar website search, and it came up. Whereas it did not come up on the first time that we only put in Scion. So you have to know kind of what you're looking for, which is very cool. And also by not knowing, we found these like mysterious funds that are ancillary.
I so messed my case about what a ridiculous website the SEC has built here compared to just some people in private cap.
It's just
private people
showing us the legal filings. That's all it does.
Yeah.
So now
without
that
a brain at all.
Scion Asset Management, LLC.
Oh, you're
and this
kidding.
One is a 13F-HR. 13F-HR NT means that they're not going to tell you any holdings. 13F-HR means it does have holdings.
Wait, I'm not getting anything.
You're not?
No.
Put in Scion Asset.
Scion Asset
Management, then it came up.
Comma, LLC.
Well, you don't have to put in the LLC. Scion Asset will bring it up.
Scion Asset.
You've got Scion Asset Partners is the first one, and then Scion Asset Management is the second one.
Search. You're right. You know what I put in? You ready for how stupid this website is?
Yes.
I put in Scion Asset Management, comma, LLC, and it told me there was nothing there.
Well, that's stupid.
Watch. Let's do it again. This is unbelievable. Okay. Scion Asset Management, LLC. There it is. Am I misspelling anything? Maybe I can't use capitals.
There it is. It's right there. It's right below.
Wait,
it's right
I'm
there.
Gonna click search.
No, you don't have to click. Okay. Oh my gosh.
And what comes up? No matching companies.
It was right there. It was showing up for you automatically.
Where did it go?
Oh my gosh. This is like showing your grandpa how to use the internet.
Okay, wait. So here I am, Scion Asset Management. There's nothing on the page.
No. It shows it in automatic lookup. Click on the end, delete there. Click on the end, delete the C. Go back, keep going back, delete, delete, delete. Oh my gosh.
Scion.
There we go.
Asset Management.
Put in asset. This is like torture.
Okay.
No, you're putting, okay, just forget it. You're putting in too many words.
This is proving everything I believed about this website. Proving it.
God
forbid.
Without
a shadow of a doubt.
One should have to search.
It's totally screwed up and written by people who are on government.
Okay, I'm taking your video off. I'm going to put my video on.
Okay, I am now going to stop sharing. You go ahead. Your turn.
Okay.
But make it snappy, because this has already proven everything I wanted to show you.
Oh, make it snappy, huh? Mm-hmm. About the SEC website?
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Voila.
Now, here we are.
This is what Scion owns. It's very long, and it has multiple entries for the same company sometimes.
Great.
So it is, to your point, Dad, very annoying.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you, honey.
But it is the data from the source. So if you're somebody who's good with Excel, what a lot of people do if they're good with Excel is copy this data in and make their own tables and own charts so that they can chop and dice the data in any way they want. Now, I think it's important to know where this stuff comes from, because otherwise you don't know when something's wrong with it. But a much easier way to do it is to go
now
to a website such as Rule One's website or Dataroma, which I have right here, which will tell us exactly what he owns and sold, and even helpfully tells us like in what percentages he bought or sold, which the SEC will not tell us.
No,
won't. It's very nice and very helpful and very available. It's fantastic. It's ad supported, so anybody can use it. I'm a big fan.
So this is a fantastic tool that you all should be using. No question about it. And I'm just going to tell you right now, we use it all the time. Every quarter, most of the gurus, and by the way, there's like 8,000 or more gurus that are tracked by the SEC, and the vast majority of them will not do you any good to look at all, because they are just tracking hundreds of companies. So you have no idea how, or even if they're committed at all to a company, if they're just buying it because other people bought it. The vast majority of those fund managers are cloning each other and just trying to stay with the market. What we're looking for are very specific signs that this person is our kind of investor. And the easiest one to spot is simply the number of companies the person owns. That's just the easiest one. If they own less than 20 companies, they almost are certainly our kind of investor, because that means that they're putting in, on average, 5% of their portfolio into one business. And this is really scary for the vast majority of people who are managing money. They don't want to get that committed to anything because they don't have that level of certainty and they're not doing that kind of research. So this is rule one style investing. You're going to end up with a very small number of companies. And so we're looking for people who are gurus who have that same characteristic. So that would be the thing I'd be looking for on Dataroma, Whale Wisdom, over on our toolbox, and so on.
I would like to know how you knew that Michael Burry or Scion has way more funds under management than are appearing on these 13 Fs.
We're going to have to go into that later because it's a little bit of a secret.
Yeah, okay.
But I will tell you, it's very important. If you look at something and someone owns 25% of their portfolios in this one company or 47% of the portfolios in one company, you really need to know what the big picture is, right? So you can look up somebody like Prem Watsa and it looks like he has almost 50% of his portfolio in one company and he doesn't. It's not even remotely near that because what's not showing is the vast majority of the money that he's actually managing. And that's because a lot of it's invested in foreign companies, a lot of it's in cash, and so on. So that's just,
yeah.
So you got to be able to find that out. We'll talk about that next time. A good thing to check.
We'll talk about that next time.
All right. So there you go. 13 Fs. You guys get on it. Start cloning your little selves. And what you do with the clone stuff, by the way, is use it as a starting point for building your watch list. That's what you're going
to
do.
Well, and what we wanted to look at is kind of, you know, what these guys are buying and selling in this crazy time here, which is going to require some slicing and dicing of the data. So that's a thing that I started and didn't finish this week.
Next week, time to go have Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh my gosh, it's almost Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, honey.
Happy Thanksgiving. We are, of course, separated as our almost everybody's families.
Oh, miss you and Noons.
I know, me too. But it's okay. It's important to
stay
safe and be separated. And I don't know. What else is there to say about that? Everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, be safe out there. Really, COVID, if you're in the U.S., COVID is really rocketing.
If you're everywhere, gosh, it's so bad in Switzerland.
Could be a real rough 2 months, so be very careful and try not to.
Oh, I have a general comment, which if it helps even one person, I will be glad that I said. When you're like, a lot of people are planning outdoor gatherings, which is great, but even like still, I would say please wear a mask. And I'm saying this as somebody who's been sick for 3 months and probably won't get better for a while. So wear a mask if you can, even if you're outside. But the important thing that I want to mention is that as you like get sort of festive and people start talking and it's fun, we all tend to like lean in a little bit to hear each other better. And you start feeling more comfortable after you've been together for half an hour, an hour. And especially once there's like a little wine, you know, you start feeling like, oh, you know what? We love each other so much. It's fine. Just keep it in the back of our minds. It's not fine. Like, stay apart. Wear the mask if you can. Take it off just to eat and drink. Put it back on. Just stay apart. Don't get this thing. That's my Thanksgiving message.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
All right, babe.
I feel like I'm such a downer every time I come on here.
We're really happy you're getting well,
babe. I just want everybody to not do this, not go through this. All right.
Time to go play.
I'm thankful for life.
See you guys next time.
Oh my gosh, you're trying to get rid of me now. Okay.
Yes, we are. Bye.
All right. Bye.
See ya. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.